The new Snow White movie is bombing at the box office, but coming up, I'll tell you why that might be a good thing for society. Also, those high energy bills in Maryland, those high BGE bills, why you might be getting some relief from the legislature, but to be honest, it's not enough. Also, are we facing Trump burnout? We're going to talk about all of that and more on Straight Talk with Euripsy Morgan. So the new Snow White movie is out in theaters and it is not doing well. Domestically, it made about $43 million in its opening weekend. IMDb has it at 1.5 out of 10. It's kind of tanking. And I think a lot of it has to do with the main character and the way she has been promoting this film. Listen to this.
I mean, you know, the original cartoon came out in 1937, and very evidently so. There's a big focus on her love story with a guy who literally stalks her.
Yeah.
Weird.
Weird.
So we didn't do that this time.
So that was one of the earlier interviews that Rachel Zegler, who plays Snow White in the movie, did. And immediately, I think it threw people off. Because we were like, wait. I came here to watch Snow White. I thought we were going to do a Snow White remake. And now you're telling me it's not going to be Snow White. And it feels very woke. And I think we're kind of getting over a lot of that. Now, we'll talk about the movie in just a second. I have not seen it. My daughter actually went to a sleepover last night. And they went to see it as part of the birthday party. I will ask her opinion later what she thought about it. But she never saw the original either. So take her thoughts with a grain of salt. But I think for me, the reaction to Rachel Zegler's portrayal of Snow White has been very, very interesting. Not so much about the movie itself, right? And I get that she doesn't look like the traditional Snow White. And yes, that is irritating because I would like, if you're going to make a live action remake of the movie, I want the actual plot, right? The original plot. That's why I liked it as a kid. I remember watching Snow White and, you know, for weeks after watching Snow White being like, oh, I'm not going to eat an apple. I might get, you know, poisoned. And then next thing I know, I'm marrying a prince. Oh, no. But I remember for a long, long time, you know, going to the grocery store and seeing like, what are those red delicious apples? Which I actually don't like, by the way. I like green apples. And wanting to like them because of the movie, you know, I just thought it was so cool. But those are my memories of the Snow White movie, right? And so when you're going to make a live action remake, I want the original movie. Unless you're going to do a whole new spin like Snow White and the Huntsman, remember that? I just watched the first one, but I really enjoyed that because it's kind of like fan fiction where you take the original and you add on to it, but at least I know what I'm getting. I know I'm not getting the original. I'm getting a different spin, or I'm getting an addition, or somebody else's viewpoint. The Huntsman. That was not part of the original. It wasn't a big part of the original. So I actually really enjoyed that, but I knew what I was getting coming into it. With this new version, you have this actress who has a tendency to be very woke. No, so she also, in part of the promotion, she let her political beliefs be known in regards to Palestine. And so I think already she was very clear about her mindset going into this movie. And it was not about the movie. It was about her politics. And that really, I think, distracted the audience. But I want to back up for just a second because the reaction, right? So I know as they've been doing all these remakes, there have been a lot of reactions about who's being cast and are they sticking to the original movie? And then are they, Little Mermaid was a big one too, because the actress in that one is black and her hair was not, it was red-ish. But for me, again, it was the fact that the Little Mermaid has bright red hair. You know, I wasn't concerned that she wasn't white. I was more concerned with the bright red hair. But there's been a lot of controversy at this point. I don't know why Disney is still doing these live action remakes. I think like let's just cut it out. Like maybe it's because they haven't come up with a really good idea since, I don't know, The Lion King. It's been a while. But the reaction I think is really fascinating because I was on air. I used to do a radio show here in Baltimore during what I would call the peak wokeism time frame, that era. Let me just back you up to 2017 or so when I started. So Donald Trump was president had just been elected for his first term. And it was like peak wokeism. So there were controversies about the Christmas song, Baby, It's Cold Outside. You remember that song? We were actually having conversations on air about consent. And people were trying to cancel this song because they were saying, oh, there was no consent. Comedians were getting canceled. I think the only one who may have made it out of that relatively unscathed was Dave Chappelle. And it's because it's Dave Chappelle, right? But everybody else seemed to be afraid to say anything or do anything. And it almost felt like we had, like you know, the insane people were the ones that were running the asylum. It was a very, very weird time. And that's not to say that people were not trying to fight back against it. Of course they were. But we were getting shouted down. We were being told, you know, again, with that Christmas song, you know, oh, you're okay with lack of consent. And it's like, what? I'm not. How can I argue with you? You know, none of this makes any sense. However, the controversy with Snow White is different. It's not that people are, it's not the woke crowd. It's not, people aren't upset because it's not woke enough. People are upset because I think we've gotten to a point where we are recalibrating and we are saying, you know, it's not about being woke and, you know, that's a, you know, different conversation. It is a realization that not everything has to be so extreme, right? That there is a time and place for things. So for example, I'm sure most of you are like this too. If you were to look at my playlist on Spotify, you would think that I am schizophrenic, and probably most of you as well, right? I have my whole like list of country playlists. I have my whole list of, 90s and early 2000s. It is just everything. It's like my book list as well. I love Abraham Lincoln. I'm also now into this fantasy world, Fourth Wing, you know? I mean, it is just different versions of us. And we, I think, are now where it was very extreme to the left just a few years ago. I think society is now getting more comfortable saying, no, not everything has to be this ultra feminist, you know, or girl bossed kind of thing. Sometimes I do want a story where the prince gets the girl. I do want, you know, him, I want the story. I want the fantasy. And it feels like 6 years ago, 5 years ago, we were not allowed to say that without getting shouted down. Now, this movie is tanking because people are saying, I want the original. I want the love story. I want the princess. I want to see the big ball gown. As a matter of fact, I remember it was the Beauty and the Beast movie, which I loved. Emma Watson, like, I have loved her since Harry Potter day one. But when she did the Beauty and the Beast, she was the reason that I watched it. There was a lot of controversy about her dress. It wasn't big enough. And you know what? I agreed with it. That movie, that dress, that whole ballroom scene made the movie. But my point is that I think we are, as a society, recalibrating. So she gave this recent interview about her views on the movie. And take a listen to this.
Not going to be safe with the prince, and she's not going to be dreaming about true love. She's dreaming about becoming the leader she knows she can be and the leader that her late father told her that she could be if she was fearless, fair, brave, and true.
Well, if that's what the movie's about, then I don't want to watch it. I just don't. You know, I have a whole list of books and movies, you know, if I wanted to feel, or if I wanted to encourage a certain type of mentality, or, you know, girl boss energy, whatever you want to call it, I'm all for that, but not in this movie. And I think it is perfectly okay to show people that you can have balance. That's, I think, really what I find interesting about this controversy, that I think it's society saying, no, we don't want to go too far to the left. We also don't want to go too far to the right. It's like one of the first times that I have seen us as a society kind of openly crave more balance. You know, yes, you can have the girl boss energy, but at the same time, there are times when I am perfectly okay with a fairy tale being a fairy tale. And, you know, I think that if you go on TikTok, maybe it's just my algorithm, right? But I see a lot of women, and particularly my age, past 30, right? You know, so we are in our middle era. But we've done the corporate thing, right? We went to school, we, you know, got great jobs, and, you know, we got married, and we have our children, and we are kind of recalibrating ourselves and saying, I think I'm gonna take some time for me. I'm gonna read a fantasy book. I'm going to plant a garden. I am fine with my husband taking out the trash because I'm not gonna do it. And it has nothing to do with my self-worth or my value as a woman. It has to do with the balance that I need in my life, right? And I think that 5 or 6 years ago, we didn't have that. For heaven's sakes, people, we were trying to counsel a Christmas song. That's insane. Like, I remember having that conversation on air and just looking at my producer and being like, is this reality? Are we really talking about this? And we were. And now that the tables have turned, I am glad to see that it's not turning so far to the other side. I think it really is just people recognizing that wokeism is very much on the decline, and we can now get to a place as society with a little more balance. If you're enjoying the show, make sure that you subscribe to Straight Talk with Eurypsy Morgan on YouTube at Y Morgan Show. Also, you can find us on iTunes and Spotify. The Maryland legislature is back at it again, trying to solve a problem that they helped create. Listen to this new proposal.
Two payments will go to ratepayers in the state of Maryland, and the more energy you use, the more you'll get.
Just like rates are, where rates are based on kilowatt usage for on the electric side, it would be a similar type of rebate.
The payments come from a fund energy companies pay into when they run out of renewable energy credits. It's expected to total $200 million in payments.
$200 million in payments. Now, this is supposed to help ease the burden on Maryland ratepayers, because most of us have been dealing with these huge electric energy bills. And it has to do with the increase in how much people are using the energy, but also the increased in the rate that you're paying. Now, why did I say that the Maryland General Assembly helped to create this problem? So, as I said, what that clip was talking about from WMAR was that in answer to this, and I think because most of the politicians in this state have been dealing with constituents calling them and emailing them saying, "My bill is out of control. What are you going to do about it?" So their solution is, oh, I know, a rebate. Here, we'll help you pay those bills. I want to know why the bills are as expensive as they are. So that's what we're going to talk about, because they helped create this problem. Let me explain. So if you pull up your BGE bill, I'm just using BGE as an example, right? So take a look at this. I have one here. You can see right here, we've kind of highlighted the important part of this. Go to page 2 of your bill, and you're going to see two really important charges. One is the Empower Maryland charge. What is that? Why are we paying that? Where did that come from? I'm glad you asked. So back in 2008, there was the Empower Maryland bill. That was amended in 2024 to allow the state to collect this fee. Okay, they're collecting this in order to make energy upgrades. Well, what do you mean energy upgrades? So different types of green energy upgrades, because of the state's green energy policy goals, they've created this fund to help pay for that. But what does that mean? It means that you're getting an extra surcharge on your bill. Now, the really important one is right below, the distribution charge. Let's talk about that, because that's where a massive part of your bill comes from. What's going on with the distribution charge? Well, we got to back up just a little bit. Telling you how the legislature is partly to blame for these massive energy bills. So what happened with energy in Maryland? Well, because of the green energy policies in Annapolis, they've passed multiple different bills over the last several years intended to fight climate change and encourage green energy policy. For example, we have the Climate Solutions Now Act of 2022. We're trying to require the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions by 60% by 2031, require at least 75% of our electricity purchased by Maryland for state facilities to come from no or low carbon energy sources by 2030. In Baltimore City, they've passed multiple bills as well in relation to these climate change policies. Now, in order to meet those goals, there have to be changes made, dramatic changes. And in Maryland, over the last close to a decade now, we have shut down 7 coal-fired power plants. So they don't exist anymore. However, that doesn't mean that people stop needing energy or needing electricity or supply, right? So what ends up happening? Because Maryland does not produce enough energy, and we just don't, we have to import about 40% of our energy. So yes, we can try, we have tried wind and solar, but the truth is that those things just do not produce enough energy. So what ends up happening? We have to import it. Maryland is part of a 13-state grid, and we pull energy, we get energy, we buy it from other different parts of the country, including places like Ohio and Pennsylvania. Well, guess what? It costs a lot of money to import that energy into the state. It's kind of like if you decide that I'm not going to cook at home anymore. 40% of the time, I'm not going to cook at home anymore. Okay, great. So you're just not going to eat for 40% of the time, or you're going to eat out. And what Maryland has decided is that we are taking a stand. We're not going to cook at home. We're going to eat out 40% of the time. Well, if you do that, you should not be shocked if your credit card bill gets much higher. Because guess what? It's more expensive to eat out than it is to cook at home, generally. And so that's exactly what Maryland is doing. Because we don't produce enough energy, we have shut down these coal-fired power plants, and we're not producing enough energy. We have to import 48%, and it costs more money to import that energy into the state. Also, ironically, a lot of the energy that we are importing comes from coal plants and natural gas, which are two forms of energy that the state has said, we don't want to do, we don't want to handle, but we're okay importing it from someone else. All right, that doesn't make any sense. But specifically about the state's policies, why is it that I keep saying that the state's policies are largely to blame for the increase in energy bills? Well, I just named for you a series of bills going back to 2022, the Climate Solutions Now Act, and these new restrictions or these new goals that the state has put in. So in Maryland, the way it works is if BGE is going to try to increase rates, then they have to go to the Public Service Commission. In 2023, in December, I believe, of 2023, the Public Service Commission released a press release where they voted unanimously to allow BGE to increase their rates. Okay, so now everybody's mad at the Public Service Commission. But wait, do you know why they said it was necessary to allow BGE to increase their rates? To meet the state's electrification goals. That is in the press release. The reason BGE said that they needed to increase the rates in part was to meet the state's electrification goals, the goals that were set by these bills. Now, what does that mean? Let's talk about some of the goals specifically. There's like this obsession with electric cars. We've got to, everything's got to be electric, right? All right, well, there is a, we're gonna have to make some changes, because think about electric vehicles, for example. You have to charge them in electric charging stations. Do you even have one in your neighborhood? Most people don't. I don't. I think I have a neighbor who has a Tesla. He may have a charging station. I don't know. I haven't seen. But they're not as plentiful as gas stations. Gas stations are on every corner. So there is a massive amount of infrastructure redo that needs to happen in order for us to have the type of energy facilities that the state says we're going to have by 2030 or whatever it is, whatever the timelines are. And so BGE was saying, hey, look, in order to meet the state's electrification goals, there need to be upgrades and changes that need to be made, right? These are directly a result of the policies in Annapolis. And somehow these legislators are all of a sudden shocked. Like, what do you mean it costs money to redo our energy infrastructure to meet our goals? Well, what do you think was going to happen? Listen, I don't do websites. I'm an attorney, right? So I practice law. My good friend Tori Snow has this business, Seven Snows, and he makes websites. Oftentimes I will go to him and I'll say, hey, can you do this on my website? Can you change this, or can this be done? And to be honest, I don't know if it can be done. I don't make websites. So I go to him to get it done, right? And he knows whether or not this is doable, is it feasible, and how much it's going to cost, right? Because that's a big part of this. The state legislature, when they have these bills, when they introduce these bills, when they pass these bills, they seem to completely ignore that their wish list of items actually has a cost. And we, the Maryland ratepayers, these energy bills, we are the ones that are in large part paying these costs. to fulfill the wishes that they hand down every spring. That's why I say that they have a significant part of the blame in the rising cost of energy bills. So earlier this week, City Council President Zeke Cohen was going door to door, and he had this petition, and it was trying to get people to sign this petition to stop the BGE rate hikes. And at one point, he was interviewed and said that you know it's not in the jurisdiction of the City Council. He's not in charge of BGE. The Public Service Commission is the one that allows them to set the rates. So they were going door to door, getting people to sign this petition. Now, hang on. This is so frustrating because, no, the City Council does not control BGE, but they do significantly influence the types of things that end up that have to happen. So, for example, Baltimore City Council passed, I believe this was in 2023, Bill 21-015. It was to help facilitate a transition to zero emissions vehicles for the city's administrative fleet. So most likely all electric vehicles for the city's administrative fleet. Again, with the electric vehicles, look, if you want an electric vehicle, I'm all for it. That's fine. But if the state is going to mandate a changeover to electric vehicles, or in this case, the city council to the administrative fleet into electric vehicles, where is the infrastructure for that? You know, electric vehicles are not run on hopes and dreams. You actually have to plug them in somewhere. So where is that place? Where is it going to happen? Are there enough of them? And so because there is this big change in infrastructure, BGE went to the Public Service Commission and said, hey, look, we've got to, you know, meet the state's electrification goals. We need to increase the rate. And guess what they did? They allowed them unanimously to do that. Now you have the folks in Annapolis all of a sudden scratching their heads and saying, whoa, hey, I didn't know this was going to cost money. I didn't know that this was going to be expensive. Meanwhile, the ratepayers, us, you and me, are saying, yeah, it is very, very expensive. And their response to a problem that they helped create by shutting down a significant source of our energy, requiring the state then to have to import energy at a higher cost, is now to... well, we're going to do a rebate, you know, because with all the money that the state has, yeah, we're going to do a rebate and it's going to help solve the problem. It's not. Listen, green energy policies and things like that, I think they obviously have a place, right? We are climate change. We're not going to debate the merits of climate change, but I do think that we all have a responsibility to try to help in any way that we can. But our legislators have to be more responsible and have a little bit more foresight, right? To see that if I do X, then this might happen. And so far, they have refused to believe that any of the policies that they've enacted over the last couple of years have led to the situation, the energy crisis that we're in. And the reality is, it all stems from these policies in Annapolis. It all stems from the fact that they have absolutely no patience and no ability to foresee how a lot of what they are doing in Annapolis is causing the problems that we are experiencing in our own homes. I'm in the car a lot, and to keep from being bored, I just listen to stuff on iTunes and Spotify, and now you can catch this show. You can subscribe to Straight Talk with Eurypsy Morgan on YouTube at Y Morgan Show, but you can also find us on iTunes and Spotify.
What we're going to be doing is a 25% tariff on all cars that are not made in the United States. If they're made in the United States, there's absolutely no tariff.
You know, I feel like I should be a lot more concerned about what's going on in the White House right now. And somehow I just cannot muster the energy. And I kind of feel like a lot of people are feeling the same way. Is it just, is it like a burnout? Is it a Trump burnout? Or is it just a national news burnout? Have we just had so much bad news in the last 5 to 6 years that we're all just kind of collectively choosing to ignore what's going on? It has not been a great month. Just recently, the S&P 500 dropped 2%, which is the worst that it's been in the last 2 years. The Dow Jones actually dropped 715 points. That's not good. The NASDAQ fell 2.7%. The president is talking about new tariffs, 25% on imported vehicles and parts. There are not a lot of vehicles that are made in the U.S., except ironically Tesla. Tesla is made in the U.S. I actually saw this NPR headline. Trump's new tariffs on imported cars could have a clear winner. Tesla. Am I supposed to be mad at them? They make cars here in the U.S., which means they provide jobs and salaries to people in the U.S. So am I supposed to be mad at them? Because I'm not. However, I do want to talk with you real quick about what I'm experiencing. I wonder if you're experiencing this too. Which I think it's not just a Trump burnout. I think it's a general burnout on bad news. Coming out of COVID, I feel like my level of panic has just, like, you used it up in that year and a half. Like, it's just kind of gone at this point. Not to say that if something really crazy happened, I would not be upset. I would. But do you remember in Trump's first term, it was like every time I turned around, the Handmaid's Tale, but it was every time I turned around, it was dystopian. It was, you know, the Constitution and everything was going to be chaos. There was going to be World War III. And somehow, miraculously, we survived. And maybe that's part of the reason that I think it's not, you know, maybe it is just me, but I have also seen this kind of apathetic response from the general public to the stuff going on in the White House. And maybe it's because we're kind of used to it, or maybe we're just not surprised by things anymore. Me personally, I'm from the generation that told us that we were all going to burn up and die because of a hole in the ozone layer. So there are not a lot of things that make me panic anymore. Then we had 9/11, which I was a senior in high school. When 9/11 happened, and there were a lot much younger kids in school, and yep, most of the kids in my generation remember watching it on TV in class. I could not imagine now an event like that happening, and my kid's teacher being like, "Oh, let's turn on the TV." We watched that stuff happen live. I watched the second tower get hit live. You know, so my threshold for panic is actually really high. And then, of course, like I said, there was COVID. And I feel like it just kind of used it all up in the year and a half. And so it is, I feel like there should have been a warning that the media should have known, Democrats in particular should have known, that there was a bit of a burnout that was likely to happen if everything the guy does is seen as, it's going to be the end of America. You know, that's it. Our democracy is in danger. Our democracy is over because Donald Trump breathed today. And I just feel like most people at this point, like, we recognize that that is not the case. But at the same time, there is, I think, just this weird kind of apathetic, you know, the stock market, that's terrible. That's terrible. But, you know, I've got stuff to do. And why are we like that? What's happening? I think some of it has to do as well because we are more used to Donald Trump. Most of us have been familiar with him, again, at least my generation, since the Home Alone days, right? And so his way of speaking is not new to me. And I'm not saying, you know, whether you support him or not, but his way of speaking, his mannerisms, his bluster is not new to me. He wrote a whole book on it, right? The Art of the Deal. And even with the tariffs I actually find very interesting in the sense that there should be more of a panic about what's going on. There should be much more of a panic with the idea that 25% tariffs for vehicles coming in will make cars much more expensive, because right now in America, we do not produce. It's kind of like when we were talking about BGE, we don't produce a lot, so we have to import a lot. And if you make it more expensive for us to import, then guess what? We're going to pay more. And that is not a good thing as a consumer. And I just bought a car last year, so kind of slid right in there. But that's concerning. Why are we not more concerned? I think some of it has to do with the very reason that Democrats tell us that Donald Trump is the worst, and it's because he changes his mind frequently. So maybe it's because we don't know if we should panic yet. You know, like, let me know when it actually hits, and then I'll decide if I want to panic. But at this time, if I panicked every time he said he was going to do something, I would be dead. Like, I would not exist anymore. Instead, maybe we really are getting more used to the way that Donald Trump interacts with the media and the public, and we're just not gonna I'm just not going to fall for it every time. You know, like there is an appropriate time to panic. I just don't feel like this is it. It actually happened like when Donald Trump was nominating people for his cabinet, and the first person that he nominated, Matt Gaetz, I remember calling my talk to my friend Tori about this, and I was like, he was asking me how I felt about it, and I was like, I don't feel like anything. Like, that's not a serious nomination, so therefore I'm not even going to consider it. It's not serious. Like, you're joking. And then we'll talk about it later when the more serious ones when he names the more serious ones. And you know what? I was right. And so it feels kind of like this as well, that yes, the threat of tariffs can be very frightening, right? And can be very concerning for the American economy. But right now, that's all they are threats. And the media has done this. I think I will blame this part on the media and Democratic national leaders. They have cried wolf on so many items that, are you surprised that the American public is not falling for it every time? You shouldn't be. You desensitized the American public to everything that he did. I mean, in his first term, it literally felt like if the man walked outside, then World War III was going to break out. And telling the American public that for so many years on everything that he did was eventually going to lead to us being desensitized to anything that he did. I mean, look at this. The things that I just named off. The S&P 500 dropping 2%, the lowest in the last 2 years. Dow Jones dropping 715 points. NASDAQ fell almost 3%. Those are actually really concerning numbers. Going to the grocery store and the fact that groceries really aren't coming down. Inflation is actually not coming down. These are concerning things. 25% tariffs. There's the tariffs of China with Canada. I mean, when I say them, gee, they really does sound pretty bad. So why are we not as, why is there no panic? It's because the media and I think Democrats have just done a very good job of desensitizing everyone. And listen, I'll just say this real quick on domestic production. I get the hype, right? Theoretically, we do want things to come to be produced here in America. And I say theoretically, because I don't know that we've really thought through what that would mean. There is one thing, on the one hand, we say we want things made in America, right? However, Americans, let's be honest with ourselves. We also want to buy things that are not expensive. Okay, those are two competing interests. They are not the same thing. In other countries, and I'm just going to be very real about it, right? The reason, do you ever go on that website? I think it's Temu. I have so far done a very good job of resisting and not buying things on Temu so far. But man, I got to tell you, there are some deals on there sometimes that I'm like, oh, I'm very, very tempted. The laws in other countries are not like the laws in America in terms of labor and employment and restrictions. OSHA does not exist all over the world. And so that means that in large part, we are able to import things at a much lower cost because they are made in countries where they don't have a $15 minimum wage. They don't have OSHA. They don't have, you know, an 8-hour workday, which is terrible. It is in large part, like it is terrible. But the truth is that that's why so many of the products, especially from China, are why they're able to make them at such a low cost, because they're able to make them at a low cost and then sell them at a low cost and still make a profit. In America, however, you know, we want things made in America. That's great, but it's going to cost more money, because if you're going to make something in America, right, a widget, you're going to make it in America. Well, okay, we have, what state are you going to be in? Because you're going to be dealing with minimum wages, right? In Maryland, I mean, geez, we're at $15 an hour and they're talking about making it $20 an hour, which means that, you know, heaven forbid it's made in Maryland, because it's going to cost more money to produce that thing, which means it's going to be sold for more money. And I get it that, you know, on the one hand, we want things made in America because it means more jobs for Americans. That's great. I am totally on board with you. But just so you know, that does not mean that things are going to be as cheap as they have been in the past. Now, I mean, we want things to last. Sure, of course. And that's one argument. But I just want you to be aware that those are not necessarily on the same wavelength. You know, we want everything made in America. We want to be able to buy things cheaply. Okay, well, we're probably not going to get both. So the whole push with these tariffs is to try to get more manufacturing in the U.S., which means more U.S. jobs. But again, we'll probably make things more expensive in the long run. But I guess we'll see. You know, I'm certainly not encouraging anything to get worse. We want things to get better. But I think this should be a lesson for the media and for Donald Trump, for the media and for Democrats. Eventually, there was going to be a burnout. And I think we may be pretty close to it. We're getting closer and closer to the end of the Maryland legislative session. We'll see what Democrats came up with. And coming up next week, we'll also see if those tariffs actually came to fruition. What does that mean for the Maryland economy? Make sure that you don't miss any episodes of Straight Talk with Euripsy Morgan on YouTube at Y Morgan Show. And also find us on iTunes and Spotify.